Proud, the proud, the happy one. All is sleeping on the hill. One died in shameful childbirth, one of a thwarted love, one at the hands of a brute in a brothel, one of a broken pride in the search for heart's desire, one after life in faraway London and Paris was brought to her little space by Ella and Kate and Mag. All are sleeping, sleeping, sleeping on the hill.
Way down upon the Wabash, such land was never known. If Adam had crossed over it, the soil it surely owned.
He'd swear it was the garden he played in as a boy. And straight pronounced it Eden in the state of Illinois. She's bounded by the Wabash, the Missouri, and the lake.
There's quicksand in her swampy lands and inner fields of snakes.
But these are slight diversions that take not from the joy of living in the garden spot,
the state of Illinois. So
I belong to the church and the party of Prohibition, and the villagers thought I died of eating watermelon. In truth, I had cirrhosis of the liver. For every noon for 30 years, I slipped behind a prescription counter in Trainer's drugstore and poured a generous drink from the bottle marked Spiritus Fermenti. Thought that I would be as great as Edison or greater. For as a boy, I made balloons, wondrous kites, toys with clocks, little engines with tracks to run on, telephones of cans and thread. I played the cornet, painted pictures, modeled in clay, even took the part of the villain in the octoroon. But then, at 21, I married, had to live. So, to live, I learned the trade of making watches and kept the jewelry store in the square. Thinking, 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 thinking. Not of business, but of the engine I studied the calculus to build. And all Spoon River watched and waited to see it work. But it never worked. And a few kind souls thought that my genius was somehow hampered by the store. That wasn't true. The truth was this, I didn't have the brains.
I would have been as great as George Eliot, but for an untoward fate. For look at this photograph of me made by Pennywit, chin resting on hand. Ah, deep-set eyes, gray too and far searching. But there was the old problem. Will it be celibacy, matrimony, or unchastity? Then, John Slack, the rich druggist, wooed me, luring me with the promise of leisure to write my novel. So I married him, giving birth to 8 children. I had no time to write. Well, it was all over for me anyway when I ran the needle through my hand while washing out the baby's things. And I died from lockjaw. Oh, an ironical death. Hear me, all ambitious souls. Sex is the curse of life.
Soldier, oh soldier, a-coming from the plain, courted fair lady, though he didn't know her name. Her beauty shone so bright, it didn't seem to matter, and he'd kiss her on the mouth just to stop her endless chatter. Fa la la la, la 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 la, fa la la la, la 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 la. She said, oh soldiers, I would be your wife. He kissed her on the mouth again and ran for his dear life. Her father grabbed his rifle and after him rode fleetly, but the soldier ran so far, so fast, he disappeared completely. Fa-la-la-la, fa-la-la-la-la, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la.
I was the first fruits of the battle of Missionary Ridge. When I felt that bullet enter my heart, I wished I'd stayed at home. And gone to jail for stealing the hogs of Curl Trenary instead of running off and joining the army. Rather 1,000 times the county jail in the line of this marble figure with wings and this granite pedestal bearing the words Pro Patria. What do they mean, anyway?
No Toheimer ran away to the war. The day before, Curl Trenary swore out a warrant through Justice Arnett for stealing hogs. But that's not the real reason he turned a soldier. He caught me running with Lucius Atherton. Well, we quarreled, and I told him never again to cross my path. Then he stole the hogs and went to the war. Back of every soldier is a woman.
Getting more with a medley of horns, bassoons, and piccolos stirred in my brain by crows and robins and the creak of a windmill, only these. And I never started a plow in my life that someone didn't stop me in the road and drag me off to a dance or a picnic. And I ended up with 40 acres. I ended up with a broken fiddle and 1,000 memories. And not a single regret.
Now, judge, leader in the state, member of Congress, Hamilton Green.
Remember when I fought the bank and the courthouse ring for pocketing the interest on public funds?
Yeah.
And when I fought our leading citizens for making the poor the pack horses of the taxes?
Yeah.
And when I fought the businessmen that fought me in these fights, do you remember?
Yeah. I was a peasant girl from Germany. Blue-eyed, rosy, happy and strong. And the first place that I worked was at the Thomas Greens. One summer day, when she was away, he came into the kitchen, put his arms about me and kissed me on the throat. I, turning my head. After that, neither of us seemed to know what happened. And I cried for what would become of me. And I cried and cried as my secret began to show. And then one day, Mrs. Green came to me, and she said that she understood and would make no trouble, and being childless, would adopt it. He had given her a farm to keep still. So she hid out in the house, and she sent out rumors as though it was happening to her. And all went well. And the baby was born. They were so kind to me.
I was the only child of Francis Harris of Virginia and Thomas Green of Kentucky, of valiant and honorable blood both. From my mother, I inherited vivacity, fancy language. From my father, will, judgment, logic. All honor to them for what service I was to the people.
At political rallies, when sitters by thought that I was crying at the eloquence of Hamilton Green, that was not it, no. No, I wanted to say, that is my son. That is my son.
When my mustache curled and my hair was black and I wore tight trousers and a diamond stud, I was an excellent knave of hearts and took many a trick. But when the gray hairs began to appear, lo, a new generation of girls laughed at me, not fearing me. And I had no more exciting adventures wherein I was all but shot for a heartless devil. But only drabby affairs, warmed over affairs of other days and other men. Time went on until I lived at Mayor's Restaurant, partaking of short orders. A gray, untidy, toothless, discarded, rural Don Juan. There is a mighty shade here, Dante, who sings of one named Beatrice. And I see now the force that made him great drove me to the dregs of life.
Times are getting hard, boys. Money's getting scarce. If times don't get no better, boys, bound to leave this place. Take my true love by the hand, walk right through the town, telling friends we're gone away, that we are gone away.
Road slave, selling shoes and gingham, flour and bacon, overalls and clothing, 14 hours a day for 313 days for more than 20 years. Saying yes, sir, and yes, sir, and thank you 1,000 times a day, and all for $50 a month. Living in this stinking room in the Rattle Trap Commercial, and compelled to go to Sunday school and listen to the Reverend Abner Pete 104 times a year for more than an hour at a time, because Thomas Rhodes ran the church as well as the bank and the store. So, while I was tying my necktie that morning, I suddenly saw myself in the glass. My hair all gray, my face like a sodden pie. So I cursed and I cursed. You damned old thing, you cowardly dog, you rotten pauper, you to Roger Bogman, thought I was having a fight with someone. Put his head in through the transom just in time to see me fall on the floor in a heap from a broken vein in my head.
Someone with whom you have known passion.
and the glow of youthful love.
You also,
after years of life together,
feel the sinking of the fire.
And thus, fade away together, gradually,
faintly,
delicately,
as it were in each other's arms,
passing from the familiar room.
That is the power of unison between souls,
like
love itself.
Our love was handsome. Our love was fine. Our love was like a ruby when it is new. As our love grew old, it sparkled true. It did not fade. It only
she weighed scarce 90 pounds. And then that woman came along, and we married ones all broke our vows, myself among the rest. Years passed, and one by one, death claimed them all in some hideous form. But I was borne along by dreams of God's particular grace for me. And I began to write reams and reams on the second coming of Christ. And then Christ came to me and said, go into the church and stand before the congregation and confess your sin. But just as I stood and began to speak, I saw my little girl who was sitting in the front seat, my little girl, who was born blind. After that, all is blackness.
Born Lois Fluke, daughter of Willard Fluke, wife of Cyrus Spears, mother of Myrtle and Virgil Spears, children with clear eyes and sound limbs. I was born blind. I was the happiest of women, as wife, mother, housekeeper, caring for my loved ones, making my home a place of order and bounteous hospitality. For I went about the rooms and about the gardens with an instinct as sure as sight, as though there were eyes in my fingertips. Glory be to God in the highest.
God bless the moon and God bless me. And God bless the somebody I want to see.
I'll give to you a paper of pins to show you how our love begins. If you will marry me, if you will marry me.
I'll not accept your paper of pins to show me how our love begins. Oh, no, I'll not marry you, I'll not marry you.
I'll give to you the key to my heart, so we shall lock and never part. If you will marry me, if you will marry me.
I'll not accept the key to your heart, so leave it locked and never part. Oh no, I'll not marry you, I'll not marry you.
I'll give to you the key to my chest, you can have money at your request. If you will marry me, if you will marry me.
I will accept the key to your chest, so I can have money at my request. Oh yes, I'll marry you, 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 yes, I'll marry you.
She loved me. Oh, how she loved me. I didn't have a chance to escape from the minute she first laid eyes on me. Then after we were married, I thought she might prove her mortality and let me out, or she might divorce me. But few die, and none resign. Then I ran away. I was gone for a year on a lark, but she didn't complain. She said all would be well, that I would return. And I did return. I told her that while taking a row in a boat, I'd been captured near Van Buren Street by pirates on Lake Michigan and kept in chains so I couldn't ride her. She cried and kissed me and said that it was cruel, outrageous, inhuman. I then concluded that our marriage was a divine dispensation which could be dissolved only by death. I was right.
He ran away and was gone for a year. When he came back, he told me the silly story of being kidnapped by pirates on Lake Michigan. Well, I pretended to believe it, though I knew very well what he was doing. And then he met the milliner, Mrs. Williams, when she went to the city to buy goods, as she said. But a promise is a promise, and marriage is marriage. And out of respect for my own character, I refuse to be drawn into a divorce by the scheme of a husband who has merely grown tired of his marital vows and duties.
If you in the village think that my work was a good one, who closed the saloons and stopped all playing of cards, who hailed old Daisy Fraser up before Justice Arnett in many a crusade to purge the people of sin, why do you let the milliner's daughter Dora and that worthless son of Benjamin Pontier nightly make my grave their unholy pillow? No.
I just turned 21 when Henry Phipps, the Sunday school superintendent, made a speech in Bindle's Opera House.
The honor of the flag must be upheld, whether it be assailed by a barbarous tribe of Tagalogs or the greatest power in Europe.
We cheered and cheered the speech and the flag he waved as he spoke. And I went to the war in spite of my father and followed the flag till I saw it raised by our camp in a rice field near Manila. And all of us cheered and cheered it. But there were flies and poisonous things. And there was the deadly water and the cruel heat and the sickening, putrid food. Days of loathing, nights of fear, to the hour of the charge through the steaming swamp, following the flag till I fell with a scream, shot through the guts. Now there's a flag over me in Spoon River. A flag. A flag.
Or else, you sit with your friend, and all at once, a
silence falls on speech, and his eyes, without a flicker, glow at you. You two have seen the secret together. He sees it in you, and you in him. And there you sit, thrilling, lest the mystery stand before you and strike you dead with a splendor like the sun's. Be brave, all souls who have such visions, for as your body is alive, as mine is dead, you're catching a little whiff of the ether reserved for God himself.
I got home so drunk I couldn't see. I found a horse in the stable where my horse ought to be. I said, now come here in a little while. Explain this thing to me. Now, what's that horse in the stable where my horse ought to be?
You blind fool, you crazy fool, can't you never see? It's only a milk cow your friend sent to me.
Well, now, I've traveled this world over 10,000 miles or more, but a bridle and a saddle and a milk cow's back I never did see before. So I come home the next night as drunk as I could be, and there was a coat to hang on the rack where my coat ought to be.
Blind fool, you crazy fool, can't you never see? It's only a bed quilt your friend sent to me.
Well, now, I've traveled this world over 10,000 miles or more, but pockets on a bed quilt I never did see before. So I come home the next night as drunk as I could be, and there was a head on the pillow case where my head ought to be.
You blind fool, you crazy fool, can't you never see? It's only a cabbage head your friend sent to me.
Well, now, I've traveled this world over 10,000 miles or more, but a mustache on a cabbage head I never did see before.
Suppose you stood just 5'2". Had to work your way as a grocery clerk, studying law by candlelight until you finally became attorney at law. And suppose by diligence and regular church attendance, you became attorney for Thomas Rhodes, collecting notes and mortgages and representing all the widows in the probate court. Yet all the while, they laughed at your size and sneered at your clothes and your polished boots. And then suppose you became the county judge. And Jefferson Howard and Kinsey Keene and Harmon Whitney and all the giants that once sneered at you were forced to stand up to the bar and say, Your Honor. Well, don't you think it was natural that I made it hard for them?
If I could have lived another year, I could have finished my flying machine and become rich and famous. Hence, it is fitting that the workman who tried to chisel a dove for me made it look more like a chicken. For what is it all but being hatched and running about the yard to the day of the block, save that man has an angel's brain and sees the axe from the first?
Oh, the night it is cold, and there's no one here to hold. Far away, so far from my home. Gone away, gone to stay. For a thousand lonely days, I'm so far, so far from my home. Through these eyes, all I see is a lot of misery. Far away, so far from my home. Oh, the silence is hell. And I feel I want to yell. I'm so far, so far from my home.
God, ask us not to record your wonders. We admit the stars and the suns and the countless worlds, but we have measured the distances and weighed them and discovered their substances.
We have devised wings for the air and keels for water and horses of iron for the earth.
We have lengthened the vision you gave us a million times and the hearing you gave us a million times. We have leaped over space with speech and taken fire for light out of the air.
We have built great cities, soared through the hills and bridged majestic waters. We have written the Iliad and Hamlet.
And we've explored your mysteries and searched for you without ceasing and found you again after losing you in hours of weariness.
And we ask you, how would you like to create a sun and the next day have the worms slipping in and out between your fingers?
In the night, as I gaze at the stars in their flight, seeking answers above, seeking all.
Sons of men, look in my mirror. Isn't it real? Try this lens. What do you see now?
Globes of red, yellow, purple.
Just a moment. And now?
My father and mother and sisters.
Yes. And now?
Knights at arms, beautiful women, kind faces.
Try this.
A field of grain. A city.
Very good. And now?
A young woman with angels bending over her.
A heavier lens. Now?
Many women with bright eyes and open lips.
Try this.
Just a goblet on a table.
Oh, I see. And now?
Just an open space. I see nothing in particular.
Well, now.
Pine trees, a lake, a summer sky.
That's better. Try this lens.
A book.
Read a page for me.
Oh, I can't. My eyes are carried beyond the page.
Try this lens.
Oh, depths of air.
Excellent. And now,
light.
Just light.
Making everything below it a toy world.
Very well. We will make the glasses accordingly.
I can see.
I did not know the mountains. In age, I knew the mountains, but my weary wings could not follow my vision. Genius is wisdom and youth. I bought every kind of machine that's known. Grinders and shellers and plowers and mowers, mills and rakes and plows and threshers. And all of them stood in the rain and the sun, getting rusted and warped and battered, where I had no sheds to store them in and no use for most of them.
toward the last when I thought it over there by the window, growing clearer about myself as my pulse slowed down. And I looked at one of the mills I bought, which I hadn't the slightest need of and never ran. A fine machine, once brightly varnished and eager to do its work, now with its paint washed off. Hey, I saw myself as a good machine that life had never used.
Who knows where I'm going? Who knows what I'm after? Happiness or sadness? Love or hate or laughter?
The secret of the soil. The seed. The secret of the seed. The germ. The secret of man. The sower. The secret of woman.
I loathed her as a termagant and a wanton. I knew of her adulteries, every one. But even so, if I divorced the woman, I must forsake the ministry. Therefore, to do God's work and have it crop, I bore with her. So lied I to myself. So lied I to Spoon River. Yet I tried lecturing, ran for the legislature, canvassed for books, with but one thought in mind. If I make money thus, I will divorce her.
Oh, I love my little rooster, and my rooster loves me. I'm gonna cherish that rooster neath the green bay tree. My little rooster goes cock-a-doodle-doo, a-doodle-doo. Oh, I love my little guinea, and my guinea loves me. I'm gonna cherish that guinea neath the green bay tree. My little guinea goes patter-rack, but my rooster goes cock-a-doodle-doo, a-doodle-doo. Oh, I love my little duckling, and my duckling loves me. I'm gonna cherish that duck beneath the green bay tree. My little duck goes quack-quack, my little guinea patter-rack, but my rooster goes cock-a-doodle-doo, a-doodle-doo, a-doodle-doo.
How's Willie Metcalf? They used to call me Dr. Myers because they said I looked like him, and he was my father, according to Jack McGuire. I used to live in a livery stable, sleeping on the floor side by side with Roger Bogman's bulldog. Or in a stall. I could crawl underneath the legs of the wildest horses without getting kicked. We knew each other. On spring days, I used to tramp through the country to get the feeling, which is sometimes lost, that I was not a separate thing from the earth. I used to lose myself as if in sleep by lying with eyes half open in the woods. Sometimes I'd talk to the animals, even toads and snakes, anything that had an eye to look into. Once I saw a stone in the sunshine trying to turn into jelly. In April days, in the cemetery, the dead people gathered around me and grew still like a congregation in silent prayer. I never knew whether I was part of the earth with flowers growing in me or whether I walked. Now I know.
I am the river.
I ran away from home with a circus, having fallen in love with Mademoiselle Estralada, the lion tamer. One time, having starved the lions for more than a week, I entered the cage and began to beat Brutus and Leo and Gypsy. Whereupon, Brutus sprang upon me and killed me.
If the excursion train to Peoria had just been wrecked, I might have escaped with my life. Certainly, I should have escaped this place. But as it was burned as well, they mistook me for John Ellen, who was sent to the Hebrew Cemetery in Chicago. And John for me, so I lie here. It was bad enough to run a clothing store in this town, but to be buried here... Hoy.
Rambled over the hills where sprang the larks, and by Spoon River, gathering many a shell, many a flower and medicinal weeds, shouting to the wooded hills, singing to the green valleys. Now, at 96, I had lived enough. That is all. And passed to a sweet repose. Ah, what is this I hear of anger and heartbreak, sorrow, discontent, and drooping hopes? Degenerate sons and daughters, life is too strong for you. It takes life to love life.
Seeds in a dry pod tick, 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 like mites in a quarrel. Faint iambics that the full breeze wakens, but the pine trees make a symphony thereof. Triolets, villanelles, rondelles, rondos, ballads by the score with the same old thought. The snows and the roses of yesterday are vanished, and what is love but a rose that fades? Life all around me here in the village. Tragedy, comedy, valor, truth, courage, constancy, heroism, failure. All in the loom. And oh, what patterns, woodlands, meadows, streams, and rivers. Blind, to all of it, all my life long. Triolets, villanelles, rondelles, rondeaus, seeds in a dry pod, tick, 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 tick. What little iambics, while Homer and Whitman roared in the pine.
Unworthy and unknown, vibrations of a deathless music, with malice toward none and charity for all. Out of me, the forgiveness of millions toward millions, and the beneficent face of a nation shining with justice and truth. I am Ann Rutledge, who sleep beneath these weeds, beloved in life of Abraham Lincoln, wedded to him. Not through union, but through separation. Bloom forever, O Republic, from the dust of my bosom.
Once you have left, you can never go. There's no going back. There is only the yearning, and it haunts you. It haunts you wherever you roam. For the river is tight, and it flows to the sea, and leaving its bank, you are free, but it haunts you wherever you roam.
After a little walk, and by your pardon, I think I'll sleep. There is no sweeter thing, nor fate more blessed than to sleep. Here, world, I pass you like an orange to a child. I can no more with you. Do what you will.
They brought it to life. I wouldn't miss it for anything. I just never knew what was in it. And these are the generations that we've been talking about. They're handled very nicely. Not as Miss Anna would handle them, or I would prefer to handle them, but certainly better than I can handle them. And this is Monday, the 21st of April, 1969. And this is a brand new tape with no name so far. And this is Channel 1 Right, about 600. About Channel 1 Right, about 600. A brand new tape. And this is Spoon River Anthology, Monday, the 21st of April, 1969. A brand new tape. Spoon River Anthology. Spoon River Anthology.
Huxley and Karen Blixen. It is a place of great natural hospitality, and as soon as you've said or written that, you can pick up a paper and read where one group has killed 1,000, 2,000, 100,000 of their black brothers. And yet, with my wife and daughter, I would feel safer on the streets of Nairobi than many in New York. It is a place of comedy contrasts that are not to be believed. Playboy magazine was banned there last year because the African mothers thought it was bad for the morals of the youth. And the item next to that in the local paper read, "Man killed by a poison arrow." Nearly all of its beautiful rivers and lakes are too dangerous or diseased to go near. I remember a sign which said, "Swimming here is suicidal." Still, I would rather return to Africa on the next plane leaving tonight than go anywhere else in the world. Now, leaving out all the hokum and phony animal pictures which have been so greatly faked in literature, movies, and television, let me show you tonight all the little things that make up the everyday Africa that I know. take the telephone poles in Kenya, and that's how it's pronounced, by the way, Kenya, not Kenya. They're about 3 to 4 feet higher than ours. And you know why? Because of the giraffe. Nobody enjoys talking with a giraffe on a party line. Wife took up a zebra, but you must understand my Miriam looks at everything like it's drapery material. Another example of Miriam's new school photography. But if you are that close to a giraffe, you never can get him all in. The only way to photograph a giraffe is to stand on top of another giraffe. She thought at the time this was the front of an elephant. I suppose it is confusing, but let us hope that my wife, a great animal lover, never has to give an elephant the kiss of life. My family's favorite portrait of me. In my excitement to see something, I had laid a $3,000 movie camera down in the grass and walked away, not realizing there were thousands and thousands of square miles of grass exactly like that. Well, I swore in English, Swahili, and even tried Jewish, which I don't even know, but it was a French camera. I found it. Actually, I ran over it with a Land Rover. My expense account is going to be difficult to explain. Finds that I found that were amusing. On a golf course in Jinja, Uganda, you can see this. Ball landing in hippo footprint can be removed. That's why I didn't play in the Eldridge Cleaver Open. School crossing? Beware of elephant. Sign I saw. On the way to Mombasa, 30 miles from nowhere, was this sign. There is much about Africa that I cannot explain, but that heads the list. Toothmaker. I wonder if it's like in Hong Kong. They take your measurements and mail them to you. This is an African handshake. It's a bit of a ceremony, but shows warmth between two people. I like the custom, but it would be inconvenient for President Nixon in a long reception line. The African always accepts a gift with both hands, never just one. That would be discourteous. Somehow, this reminds me of our Internal Revenue Service. It's just natural to see two African men walking holding hands. It has no other meaning. The one other place I have seen this is, strangely enough, was with Russian soldiers walking in the Soviet Union. They usually point a direction with their heads and lips. You ask, where's the nearest road? And they point their lips and say, Oku. Even the British do it, but they deny they do it after they've done it. The men do all the sewing and the ironing, using a heavy iron with charcoal in it. The cooking, and they can pick up hot coals with their bare hands. But I'm sure they would burn themselves on one of our hot pizzas. But the women do all the lifting. When I visited some years ago with Dr. Schweitzer at Lambereni, he told me his most common operation on the African man was for a hernia. I could never understand why. It is natural for women to carry things on their heads, but it gives them grace and posture. It is the custom. This next girl is on her way to the village. She carries her shoes on her head and will put them on her feet when she gets to the village. This is called plaiting the hair and is much the vogue with Africans. The curious thing about the hairdo of the men and women, not once in many months did I see one single bushy or aerated haircut, as is so much the style of our Afro-Americans. I believe, with all respect for our black people who think that they're being African, that it is a mistaken notion of what is present-day African. The people living in the Africa whom I've seen, whether it be in the bush, the forest, or the village or city, wears his hair much as we do. It looks like it hurts. I wanted to recommend a Novocaine shampoo. Here's a very natural thing for the women to do. They always put their hand in front of their mouth when they smile. So do Oriental women. Barber shops for men are usually under a tree. That's not much fun during the rainy season. At first, there'll be no one there, and suddenly, hundreds of people will gather to see a haircut. Our cameras were exposed here openly, and they joined us. But never, really never, take out your camera and begin to film in an all-African crowd. It is discourteous and can cause serious trouble. Last year, one man had asked and been refused by the Maasai. He returned to his automobile and tried to sneak a picture from inside the car. He got a spear through his windshield. And that can ruin your afternoon, even make your wife melancholy. Ordinarily, one does not feel any hostility from the local people. The Swahili word for guest or stranger is the same, mugeni. They are always courteous but curious. One now calls them, and rightfully so, bwana, for mister. But several times they called me boy. However, at my age, I was flattered. Some local people still buy and wear something called truckskin shoes. These are made from used automobile tires. One places his foot on the used tire. Chalk is drawn round the foot. This is then cut out, and rubber thongs are placed across the top. And in 5 minutes, you have a pair of shoes. They cost less than half a dollar and will last forever, providing you can walk at all. But again, you'll notice the large, curious crowd that gathers to watch a simple transaction. Many Africans are great natural mimics, and usually of the white men. Domestic servants all have nicknames for their employers and imitate their manners and customs. I thought I'd give them something to do after I left. With this walk. Only a few miles from the city, one will still find the men and women stretching their earlobes and wearing everything in them. This is done when they're children by placing weights in a hole in the lobe and stretching the opening wider and wider. I don't know what happens when they sneeze. Some carry messages in their lobes, which might be called earmail. Others improvise with anything colorful. Yellow film wrappings that are discarded by careless tourists are popular. Now, centuries come quickly in Africa, and when the past meets the present, it can be a problem. This young man in his youth had his ears stretched, as was his tribal custom. Now, with education and opportunity and moving to the city wearing European clothes, tradition can be a hindrance. So he loops the bottoms up over his ear during the weekdays while he's working in the city. But on the weekend, when he returns to his tribal family, they have an expression in Swahili. Come on, come on, be yourself. Let your ears down. This could be a painful experience in New York on a subway. Some short person might grab them if he couldn't reach the strap.
My good friend, this is a joke.
50,000. And tell who will win after the first four or five moves. They usually play with bottle caps, one side turned up, the other down. My Randy, who plays both checkers and chess well, never had a chance, so quick and expert are these people. And they cheer a checker match like we do at a football game. Africa, where it is believed all life began, the oldest continent, remains the great mystery. For instance, it is widely believed by social scientists, though at the moment undocumented, that among non-literate people, those who neither read nor write, possess a natural gift of observation superior to ours. Tests have been conducted in Africa where large cards with pictures are held up. They're seen for 15 seconds, then taken away. The same tests are conducted with Europeans. The African will remember more correctly and with greater detail than more sophisticated people. This is called eidetic imagery, in which a picture is retained in the memory and recalled, then actually in the mind's eye can be seen again. This may have something to do with his amazing skill at checkers. It is also believed that all human beings and cultures once possessed this ability, but lost it in a modern society. And it is said that this strange phenomenon is lost by an African 6 months after moving to even a small city. If my ancestors ever had it, I wish I could get it back. I can never remember where my car keys are, where I parked the car, which car I was driving. And lately, do I have a car? These men...